welcome back to another episode of True Crime Stories, Case Number 9. So today we'll be going over a serial killer named John Christie. He was born in Halifax, Yorkshire, April 8th, 1898. This is way back then. He was the fifth kid of seven, and none of the kids had good relationships with the father. He was a really strict guy, so he showed little to no love to his kids. He was just 8 years old. His family took him to his grandfather's funeral, which was said to have a profound effect on him. He would later say that, but I mean, I don't know where that comes back in the story, because I didn't see that come back in the story. I've seen other things that happen, like this upcoming thing, which you can see a correlation to what happens in the near future. So, at school, he wasn't popular. He had no friends. A lot of the kids, you know, they would go hang out after school to go do things. He did not do that. Apparently, what he liked to do was roam around cemeteries alone, if that isn't creepy enough. And at age 15, he left school to go work full-time as a movie projectionist. And that sounds kind of cool, but at work, he ended up meeting a girl, which she invited him to come hang out. So, they went to go hang out. Things were going good, and I guess she, at one point, was like, "You can have your way with me." But the problem was, he couldn't perform. So, like all high school kids, she went around telling all the other kids, and they started calling him Reggie No Dick, because Reginald was his nickname, or his middle name. Reginald was his middle name. And they would go around and make fun of him every time they saw him, which would suck. And I can see how that would play effect on his future. So, at age 17, he got fired for stealing, and when his parents found out, they decided to kick him out the house, which is, I mean, he's only 17 years old, but take in mind, I guess this is like early 1900s, so they played by a different set of rules. So, when they kicked him out, he was called up to serve in the army and was sent to France in the height of World War I. So he was there for about a year before he went back due to eye and throat injuries in 1919 from a mustard attack. Not mustard like the condiment, but a gas mustard like chemical warfare. He left the army with a small disability pension and moved back to Halifax, where he took a job working at a local post office. That's where he began dating a woman named Ethel. And they ended up getting married, but their marriage didn't last long. You see, John was caught stealing mail and was sent to jail again. And I'm pretty sure that's like a federal offense too, to mess with other people's mail. I'm not sure how it is like back then, but today I think it's a federal offense. But this would be the first of several times he finds himself in jail for petty crimes. And Ethel at the time would visit her family on weekends while John was still at home. While Ethel was away, he got down and dirty with the local sex workers, going out at night and bringing them back for some loving, I guess. I mean, guess that's his thing. So, John goes out and brings back a prostitute, but to his surprise, Ethel came home early. And when she walks in, she sees him with another woman. So that's when they decided it was time to split. John ended up moving to London, and while living there, he got arrested about three more times. And 9 years later, John is sitting in jail, and he just decides to write Ethel a letter because he's the toxic ex. And in these letters, he's asking for forgiveness and to see if she'll take him back when he gets out. And shockingly, she still wants to be with him. And I don't know why anyone would want to take back someone who's been catching everything on the street, but she ends up giving her job up and moving to Yorkshire, or moving from Yorkshire to Southwest London area of Notting Hill. So now it's 1938, and the couple move into a ground floor apartment on 10 Rillington Place, which back then was three different apartments in a rundown house in which they had to share one bathroom, but it's okay because they have a small garden. 1939, John went back into the military, working as a special constable for the War Reserve Police during World War II. This is important because it gave John the full authority of a police officer, and you already know how some people let that power go to their head. So in 1943, John and Ethel are still living together in their awful apartment, and Ethel decides that she was going to go visit her family on the weekend. And again, John was back to his shenanigans, out looking for some to bring back home, and ends up picking up this 17-year-old prostitute. So they go back to his place, and when she's distracted, he takes a rope and strangles her. And when he knew she was dead, he first tried to hide the body under the floorboards, which is a stupid idea in the first place, because the noise to pull up the boards, and how would you cover up the smell? I mean, the evidence would be literally under your feet. He realized that this wasn't gonna work, so he waits for everyone to go to sleep and drags the body outside. He then tries to hide the body behind some bushes, but he was like, this is not gonna work. So he leaves the body in bushes and goes to dig a grave in the little garden. He came to the conclusion that the garden was, I guess, the best place to bury her in the time being. So the crazy thing is, it actually worked. For a decade, the body was undisturbed, almost like nothing happened. And I wonder what kind of garden it was. Like, it would be gross if they're growing like vegetables and fruits and eating from that garden, or if it was just like a flower bed garden or something. They weren't really specific on what kind of garden it was. Soon after, John finds a job as a clerk in a factory. While working there, he meets another woman that he thought was attractive. So one night, he asks her if she wants to come back to his place, because Ethel was not there for the evening. And she's always going out, I guess. I mean, I wonder if she's really visiting her family. I guess we'll never know. This is what she said. When she got there, he was like, come, you know, sit in this reclining chair, come make yourself comfortable. And she was just chilling, you know, she was like sitting down. And he somehow managed to trick her into inhaling coal gas fumes. I wonder how he did that. I mean, that's just like, how do you get somebody? Like, unless you're like using like chloroform or something. He made her pass out without any having any effects to him. And while she was unconscious, John decides to rape her, then grab the stockings to strangle her. I mean, this guy's just like, I guess strangling's his thing. And you see that with a lot of serial killers, like they always go after like prostitutes or something. I don't know what's the correlation there, but after she's dead, he decides to bury this victim alongside the first victim he had, that 17-year-old in the garden. So in 1948, a truck driver named Timothy Evans, his wife Beryl, and their baby moved into a flat above John's. And it was said that the family became like good friends with John and Ethel, like they're really friendly. So at one point, Beryl had found out she was pregnant again, and she expressed to John how the family couldn't afford another baby at the time and wanted to get rid of it. So Johnny boy here tries to convince her that he could perform an abortion on her, which is highly not recommended to do on your own without a doctor, let alone someone who's like not trained at all, like just a stranger. And sadly, that same day, Beryl died. But I mean, like, how do you not see that coming, letting another strange man who isn't trained to perform something like that on you? Like, it's a dangerous procedure. And now Timothy, Beryl's husband, goes to the police station to tell the police that he killed his wife. So for good reason, the police go down to the house, and I wonder why he even said that. Like, why would you tell the police that you killed your wife, like, if you didn't do it? I mean, I wonder, maybe he was like in on the abortion, so I mean, he felt like he was guilty. I'm not sure, it wasn't really clarified what happened there, but he would later say that, you know, John was the one who killed his wife. So the police go and look for Beryl, and they find her in the bathroom with the 14-month-old baby who was also dead. Police come back to the station where they arrested Timothy and was like, we found her body with the baby. And so Timothy at this point was like, just kidding, it wasn't me, it was my neighbor John who actually killed my wife and unborn child. Timothy goes on to say, John told him the abortion went wrong and that their baby was going to be adopted since Timothy wouldn't be able to take care of another baby at this point. So I'm guessing Timothy was actually in on the abortion. Oh, jeez. So Timothy had no idea that at this point his 14-month-old baby had also died. But they had no evidence that it was John who killed Beryl and the baby, so instead, Timothy gets taken to court where he gets convicted and sentenced to murder. He's then hanged on March 9th, 1950 for a crime that he didn't do, but I'm pretty sure he was a part of, because he knew about the abortion. So, I mean, he inadvertently felt as if he probably killed her, or indirectly killed her, one of the two. It was then Ethel saw a change in John during the whole trial for Timothy. And on December 14th, 1942, while Ethel was asleep, John strangled her, this time burying her under the floorboards in his flat. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised if she appeared as a ghost haunting him. Like, this guy's burying people in his walls, so That's what you see. That's what happens. And I bet she regrets answering that stupid letter that he sent her. You never go back. Anyways, so John goes back to his dark ways, picking up prostitutes, and by now he's often like killing them more often. Like, he's not just picking them up, but he's killing them as well. March 1953, John moved out of the rundown apartment and went on the run around West London. He pretty much became a homeless man, sleeping wherever he could. This meant his old place was now up for sale. So, of course, someone new was gonna move into John's old flat. But soon after someone new moved in, they began to notice a strong stench coming from the walls. And they begin to pull back the old wallpaper because maybe it was a rat or a rodent, something died behind the walls, and they're gonna go remove it. In which they found what looked like a woman's leg behind the wall in the kitchen, a clove. I mean, damn, if I found something like that in my place, I would be out of there ASAP. So, the police come and tear the place apart and they find everything. They connect John to the old apartment, and he was caught pretty fast just by an officer walking around, like, noticing him. So they took him in to be interrogated, and John referred to the murders in, quote, as these regrettable happenings. Like, what? This guy must be off in La La Land even saying they were accidents. I mean, that's just all BS. But soon after, John would confess to one murder, but would plead not guilty on the grounds of insanity. And I mean, you know, this guy's been to, I guess he was in one war and participated in the second one, but not really in the war. He worked as like a police officer, so I'm pretty sure he's seen some things and that probably messed him up in the head. So he received the death penalty, and while on death row, there had been talks about Timothy's case and whether or not there was a mistake in sending him to his death. But the government didn't want to take responsibility, so they just try to shrug it off, and on July 15th, 1953, John was hanged at Pentonville Prison to prevent further questionings being asked about Timothy's case. And in the end, there were a lot of protests about Timothy's case, and he was ended up giving a royal pardon, which was a little too late, and his body was moved closer to his wife's body. So, I mean, that's pretty much John Christie's story. Thanks for listening, and be safe out there, because you never know if the apartment you're living in might have bodies in it.